From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open. You be queen. You were fire. You were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters. They called you wisdom. Proverbs. On the backs of diamond-eyed school children who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come, dropping gem, dropping gem.
Welcome to the Dropping Gems podcast. I am your host, Debbie Brown. This is a show where we dive into, unpack, and really savor higher consciousness, making it applicable for our everyday life, all in service to our liberation and the deepest healing that is available to us. So last week, we shared an episode with my dear sister and friend and brilliant, brilliant woman and creator, Angela Rye. And the episode that we shared was a recording of an event that we spoke at together, the Black Love You Retreat, which was an incredibly special day. Huge shout out to Cody. We had a really expansive conversation around self-care, also included a viral clip. And this week, Angela is actually joining me so we can dive into even more conversation around her powerful, beautiful, huge life, the work that she does in the world, the work that she does on herself, and all of the gems that she has to drop. So Angela Rye is the principal and CEO of Impact Strategies, a political advocacy firm in the nation's capital. She's a CNN political commentator and NPR political analyst. She's been featured as an influential Politico lawyer and advocate by several publications and outlets, from Marie Claire to Ebony and the Washington Post. Rye has an unwavering commitment to ensuring positive change in the political process. Rye is a prominent strategist who has offered her on-air commentary for several media outlets, including BET, CNN, NBC, HBO, ABC, MSNBC, and TV1. The depth of her dialogue ranges from political campaigns to more complex legislation and administration policies that have long-term implications nationally and internationally. Upon moving to the nation's capital, Rye co-founded Impact, a nonprofit organization that seeks to encourage young professionals in three core areas: economic empowerment, civic engagement, and political involvement. Born and raised in Seattle, Washington, Rye learned the importance of advocacy through her family's political and community activism. She is a proud graduate of the University of Washington and Seattle University School of Law. She is my dear sister. She is my friend. I love you. I deeply, deeply respect all the work that you bring into this world, and I am honored to have you here. Welcome, Angela Rye. All right, let me start it like this, because I'm pretty sure everyone has heard our episode that we just aired from our conversation at the Black Love event that we did, which was such a beautiful day. And we've had some clips from that event on the webs that have really had a lot of beautiful dialogue coming out from them. So some of our conversation that we did that everyone's heard, I hope, if you haven't, go back to that episode, we went a little viral and there were like millions and millions of hits on this conversation, which was really beautiful because something you and I are in really deep practice with one another as friends and in our personal lives is our boundaries. It's really related to like how we show up in the world with the callings of our life as women, in our friendships, in all the facets of our being. And so it was really, for me, so interesting to see the variations in how people receive that information, right? Like from people, some people saying, oh my God, I didn't know I could have permission like this to say,
I'm unavailable for anything that is not mutually beneficial. To the people that said, what? Who do you think you are? That's selfish. And so it's such an interesting spectrum, I think, that we find ourselves in on this journey sometimes. So we're going to dive all into that. I'm getting the cart ahead of the horse. Number one, how are you?
Really good. Really, really good. It's funny because I'm hearing you say this about the conversation, and I had an exchange with someone that I didn't see the comments, but I had an exchange with someone about you saying that. And I was like, I've literally experienced her from my vantage point pour out everything to me when I'm, you know, completely depleted. And I was like, that's not my experience. I was like, to me, what that means is that she's not going to allow her love, her gifts, her time to be abused or misused. And I remember you telling me, like, I don't know when I'm pouring out too much. And you're clear about those boundaries too. So it's interesting that the default for folks is one that is so negative. But to your point, Debbie, we're not used to setting boundaries. I'm learning how to set boundaries, and I'm about to be 42 this month, right? Like it's a new thing. And so folks are used to being like, in order to be loved, like we have to lay our lives down. We have to be martyrs, like, you know, available to whatever you need and hell with whatever I need for myself. And so I think that it's revolutionary. And because of that, you will be challenged, but you were spot on.
Well, and it's funny because I think it also depends on what everyone's definition of certain words are, right? Like we have certain words that have baseline definitions in the dictionary, but our emotional connection to certain words is different for all of us based on our unique set of circumstances. And so there were some people, overwhelmingly, it was like, everybody was like, yes, like there were all of these, like, you know, duets on TikTok and all the places. But for a few people, and it was the minority, for a few people, it was like, oh, so if someone needs your help, you're just not willing to give it. And I'm like, where did that clip say that? So I think it triggered a couple things in people. I think it triggered people that are manipulators and abusers who don't want people to be in their boundaries, who are used to getting over in manipulative tactics, triggered them. Yeah. And then it also triggered people that have become really connected to this identity of their martyrdom, this identity that they have to earn love. And they haven't started the journey walking back from that to see where it started. And so it can be really conflicting to hear information like that. Like there is another way to be if you have minimized your own needs and pain to fit this certain identity. But the word mutually beneficial, you know, it's like, well, me wanting to is a benefit. You know,
that's exactly
mutually beneficial doesn't have to mean I'm receiving something in return, especially in the exact moment. The benefit for me could just be that I genuinely want to. And that goes from changing a diaper to taking out the trash. Like, that's the benefit for me to take out the trash. I'll do it when I'm led.
When it starts stinking. But, you know, the other thing, though, too, Debbie, is all that it really illuminates for me, I think, again, going back to you, is there's just people that don't know you, don't know your character and haven't experienced that, right? And so because people have been out here really hurt and harmed by folks where there was love one way, they don't know. And so to the point, it's really a lot more about them and their experiences than it is about how we experience you in the world. But for those of us who know and love you, like, you know, it's the furthest thing from the truth. It's just like, oh, you just didn't understand. That's not her.
Oh, no. But whoever thinks that, please feel free to continue to think whatever you think. I'm not harmed or moved in any way. You know what I mean? And I mean that honestly, like there is no charge for me in saying this. These are the conversations we need to have. And my point isn't going to land for everyone. And it's probably not going to be the best fit for everyone. And that doesn't mean they're wrong or I'm wrong. We all have different pathways to the truth. And for those that resonated with the way that I said it and felt a little more free because of it, that's how I was meant to be used as a conduit of God. For those that don't, I hope they find the path that resonates more closely with what they need to know and hear to find their freedom too, you know? So we have been, I guess, really in the thick talking about friendship, talking about boundaries in our recent conversations. And, you know, when I think about like all of us in this interesting time of life coming out of the pandemic, and this year flying by, like we were in 2020, like where's 2021? We make it to 2021 and blinked an eye and now we're going into 2022.
Yeah.
But literally, you know, what have been your gifts of the last couple of years, of these transitions, of these like moments to have a little bit more breathing room, have a little more opportunity to step outside of our roles and our relationships? What has meant the most to you?
I think so much. I think one, the pandemic really taught me how much output in the world. Like I was just always gone, always traveling, always performing, like all of that. And it hit me and I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? And it felt like, oh, I get time for myself. Like, oh, I can really rest. And then it started to feel a little Groundhog's Day-ish. Like, okay, I wake up doing the same exact thing every day. So then it really became about how do I share my gift with the world when I do believe part of my gifting is my voice. And so I think so many of us defaulted to a platform that recently crashed, but Instagram Live and that kind of thing, and really sharing our thoughts there. I was spending a lot of time on FaceTime with friends, built like a tremendous sisterhood and friendship with some Black women in media that it really changed my life. And in so many ways, like we'll say that it made my quarantine experience. We were doing happy hours on, you know, on Zoom and all kinds of things, celebrating friends' birthdays that way. And Debbie, with all of the lives lost now, I think we're in excess of 700,000 people. What it taught me mostly is that life is precious. And it doesn't mean that we have to rush or force our experiences, but it does mean that we owe it to every day to ourselves to give our very best. And of course, that looks different for everyone. My best today might be different than tomorrow. I keep thinking about and regurgitating when Fat Joe says, today's price isn't, or yesterday's price isn't today's price, or vice versa, you know, and that's the same even for our best effort. Like it's not going to look the same every day, but you know, if you did your best. And I think that same thing applies to our relationships, like showing up as our best selves, showing up how we want people to show up for us. And I think that I am so blessed because I have friends and family who've done that and consistently do that without being tugged or pulled or demand, like making demands of them. Like that's just what they do. So I have great examples to follow.
That's so beautiful. It feels like, you know, for those that had the ability to be with this moment in human history in that way, there was just so much freedom to be had, you know, and the room that we needed, I feel, for the integration. Because I think sometimes we come into these places with ourselves over our lives where we really tap into this change. We really tap into the ability to have these noticings and these shifts, but then life doesn't always afford for us to actually make the change. And that's what it felt like this year did. Like it gave us the space to not only make the change, but integrate the changes.
Wow. That's powerful too, because you think about the many instances, like I love saying that we're baptized by fire, you know? And so you hop out of that baptism and you're like back to life as usual. And that's not really what happened. And so I really feel what you're saying. Like there was this moment of, you know, like a big paradigm shift, a big, you know, evolution. And it's like, okay, now you kind of get to walk it out and practice it, partially because we're not all the way back to whatever normal was. And I don't know that we'll ever get back to that.
And I hope
but
not.
Even that, like the, you know, the, I hope people at least stay safe and get better. But yeah, like in terms of normal, like that monotony of doing work and you being the work and, you know, treating your body as, a mule, right? Like I hope that we don't get back to that pace. Like it was a neck breaking pace.
Yeah. You know, your pace especially, I think was so, could be considered so net breaking because the work that you do requires so much, you know, like it's like, it requires you to be on all cylinders. And it also really requires you to be embedded in some of the more challenging things about being alive, some of the more challenging things about existing in this place. You know, some of us do get the opportunity, especially when we're in our wellness journeys, to really cocoon. But the work that you've been charged with and called to do is showing up so powerfully in the world, and especially on behalf of those who need it, which means you have to stay so plugged in to really some of the things that are harder to carry. How do you find balance in that? Or how do you find ways to show up for yourself at the deepest level?
You know, Debbie, that's, you know this personally, but it is a work in progress. Like, I've not mastered it by any stretch, you know, at all. And so one of the things that I'm learning now is because of this time that we've had to really, like you said, cocoon, indulge in self-care, really figuring out things like, I'm going to take care of myself because I'll be better for everybody else. Saying that is easier than doing that consistently. And so now when something comes along, like, you know, it's a police shooting or like some of the legislation that's currently being considered on Capitol Hill or the back and forth in politics or, you know, whatever cultural viral moment is happening on air, somebody, you know, saying they're a Black person, but not acting like it, right? And then saying things that are harmful to the culture, literally harmful to the culture. So not just assigning judgment or passing judgment on one's Blackness, but literally harmful. I get mad now because I'm like, you're threatening my peace. You know, like, and what I've found recently is I can't be in, I can have peace within myself, but there's a different type of self-centeredness and selfishness when I have to block out what's happening in the world to people who look like me, who have a similar experience with me. And if I turn a blind eye to that, that's not my peace. That's a false sense of peace, right? I'm creating a bubble that distances me from reality. I'm not saying that we don't ever need to unplug sometimes, but for the convictions that I have and what I believe my mission and purpose are, I can't divorce myself from reality to the point where I just am not an advocate for people who, you know, need to survive, who need to thrive and just don't have those tools, who may not have the context, who may not have the ability to strategize in that way. That's not true compassion and that's not real peace for me. So for I've had to learn, I'm still learning, to be clear. I'm still learning how to maintain balance, inner peace in the midst of the chaos. Like, can I bring peace and healing to the situation? Can I bring the gifts and the experience that I have to a situation and not turn a blind eye to it just because it would be so much easier for how I feel to sit with whatever peace I've created for myself? You know what I mean? That dichotomy for me is crazy. It's hard. So I'm very much
in that. And how, and what is that? What is that piece as you're in process of constructing it? What does that look like?
You know, I can tell you what it feels like. It's like, you know, your favorite blanket when you were a kid. It is this warm, fuzzy feeling where, like, you know, it's really safe to drop into surrender. It is, you know, the smile that you can put on your face because you're thinking about, you know, God's goodness or the people who model God's goodness every day for you. Like, that's what it feels like to me. And there are moments, Debbie, you know, in this world, even thinking about like the migrants, the Haitian migrants at the border, where that when that thought comes in your mind, it just crashes that whole system for me. It's just like, oh. You know, and for me, I'm going, okay, I know that I deserve to feel this peace, but I know they do too. You know what I'm saying? And it's like really finding that balance. And I can tell you really honestly, at every point in my life where I've really dropped down, knowing I needed to, but really dropping down into my higher self and really tapping into what I'm supposed to become and how I evolve spiritually. Every time I've had these seasons where I'm like, oh, I can't be super pro-Black. I can't be, you know, like in college, I was like, I'll, you know, kind of participate in the BSU, but not really. I started the BSU in high school. I'm the daughter of an activist. And I went through these things where I'm like, I have to be all in here or all in there. I don't know how to do both. And at this point in my life, I'm like, I got to do both. Because I am, yes, I'm a spiritual being, but I'm living in a human body. And there are human bodies who look like me all over the world who are threatened. I owe it to these folks to stand with them, to be an ally with them. But I can't do it from an empty cup. And I think that's the thing that I've learned from you. It's like, no, when you have these pockets, those are your pockets. Take care of yourself because you're going to be back out here. And I was just like,
I don't want to go back out there, right?
I don't want to. I want to stay right here. And it's like, no, but you have to. That's your calling, right? So it's just understanding that balance. And hopefully I'll understand it soon. Right now I'm just navigating.
And you know, the balance always changes. And the balance is never a 50-50. And that's what I think, like, especially when we even share these conversations with people, and especially women, it's so important that we create that as the baseline. Like, I hate that idea of like work-life balance. We're finding our work-life balance. Like, it's never 50-50. That's not the nature of this. Yeah. You know, it's really, like you said, it's those pockets. It's okay, I have a little extra time to take care of me or to think, you know, about myself first. So I am going to take that instead of that filling that with me doing more and more and more for others, you know? But that balance, it's so tricky. It's like surrendering to the fact that sometimes it's like 20-80 and sometimes it's like 60-40.
And that's tough. When you know it feels so much better in the pocket. Yeah. Like, I love, like, you just like, yeah, it's the pocket. But the pocket is not meant for you to stay there. It's meant for you to get what you need and come back out. And that is like, I'm in resentment of that right now. I'm like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. I like it here.
Right.
It feels good.
And it's like, for who you're charged to be in the world, it's like, God needed you to have this moment of like, burrowing in the pocket, being hugged by the pocket, cocooned in the pocket, you know, like you have such big work to do on earth and it requires all of you. And it feels like the way that I see you take up space in the world, for me and my purview, it feels like you are one of the first examples of how to be a soul-led political leader, you know, like that terminology, and Deepak used to have a phenomenal program around this, but like being a soul-led leader, I think it's easy for us to think of that if like you're leading in the church, you're leading at school, you're leading in wellness, you're leading in the political sphere, you're leading in the sphere of all the spaces that really investigate and break down and call out various injustices, you know? And so we don't have a lot of examples of soul-led leaders. So even, you know, it's probably some of that challenge of when you're the first of your kind. How do I forge this new path with all of me, with the deep holistic side of myself, the deep political side of myself, the cerebral, the spirit? Does it feel like that? Do you feel sometimes like there's not as many examples to pull from?
You know, it's weird because what I mostly feel is like we don't exist in one of these boxes. Yeah. Like, you're right. Like, I can understand why people would describe me as like a political leader or a political voice, but there's so much more than that. What's happened is I've tapped into the fact that our politics impact every aspect of our lives. I am for the culture through and through. So I'll deal with racial injustice, with political injustice, economic injustice, all injustices, because I'm all about equity. So really what I feel like it boils down to is there are a number of people, including you, sis, who I look to for leadership in these spaces where I know I'm deficient. Like, okay, I know I need help here. Let me ask. I can't ask for help now. That's new. I can ask for help now. That's new. So what can I do? How do I not be the best me for y'all, but be the best me for me? So I'm an available, accessible, healed vessel, or at least healing. And that is for whatever the mission is, you know, whether it's writing this book or it's, doing a YouTube post or hosting a special. My role here is ensuring that every piece of content I create tells the truth about who we are and who we're becoming, you know? And so politics is a part of that, but it's not all of that. It defined me for a long time. And I think the 2016 election was really an early midlife crisis for me, because I'm like, that's not what I signed up to do. I don't know what's happening here, but that's not what I signed up to do. I had put all of my hope and trust and faith in a system that could be trivialized so easily. And it doesn't mean that we don't participate in that way anymore. But Devi, you know this better than me. That's not only where our power lies, right? And in order for me to help people to access their power, I have to be comfortable with mine, you know? And I can't do that broken. I can't do that in denial. I can't do that out of purpose, out of sync, right? I can't do that going off on people on air when that's not even the way that my gift is supposed to be used. Right. And so in order for me to be a soul led leader or be a healed leader, I have to know clearly who I am and where I'm going. Doesn't mean I won't ever have blind spots. I got folks like you to tell me when I can't see something, like, hey, sis, you missed this spot right here. Thank God. But like, we can't deepen into that work and really live out that work if we don't have folks around us who are, you know, soul family. And can help guide us down that path. But it's so, to me, it's so much bigger than a political mission. It is about how to ensure that our culture, our folks are more powerful than they've ever been. And that means taking a look at the whole picture, holistically, what has to shift. And that means I got to figure that out for me too.
Okay. Whew. So I have two places I want to go, because you just touched on something that was really powerful that I had never heard before. Before I get to that piece, I just want to call out two pieces of language I would like to be reframed. This idea of deficiency. Okay, yes. I've heard you use that word before, and I want to really challenge it with you, because there is nothing about you that is deficient. And it's like, you are so powerful, and you hold such a high level of a mirror and accountability to the world that I think sometimes you're a little too harsh with yourself in the way that you see things. Mm-hmm. Because my sister, you are not deficient in a thing, you know? So even that's just like a tiny little area to soften, because there are some things that we're in progress with at varying levels from others, but we're all whole, and you do so many things so powerfully right for yourself. So I just want to challenge that word as a way to describe it, and the word blind spot. Because you are not blind to anything. Mm. You may be called to focus on other facets of growth or healing at different times, because we can't do it all at once. But you have great grand vision. So I just want to say that.
Now, Devi, you know, I can see this way. Periphery might be like, now if I take these contacts out, you might say I'm blind. You will be blurry, child. So there's definitely blind spots.
Well, there's spots that we don't acknowledge yet, because the lesson isn't complete. You know, the piece of it that we needed for our shifting isn't always completed. I don't think you're blind to anything. Yeah.
But you're there. You tell me. I think that's
no,
good.
No, I love that. Yes. Like, I'm just challenging the language that we talk to ourselves with, because I do think that's important.
Okay, give me another word.
So for blind spot, in the way that you use that word, I would say, you know, maybe an area you're still in discovery with. Because there, like, when I think, of our conversations, even the things I sometimes do be like, oh, girl, that was a blind spot for me. Thank you for showing me that. The deeper truth is it wasn't. You're wise as hell. Like, you're very, very wise. And it was something that you already maybe saw or touched on. There was just opportunity to fill in some of the blanks.
I think that you are an incredible player, and I think it's fine. No, I'm serious, Debbie, because like, whatever it is, we don't want to say deficiency, we may not want to say weakness, we may not want to say blind spot, but like, for to have somebody, and that to me, maybe this is my crazy love language, but to me it's like, to have somebody that will be that like radically honest with you is the greatest love. They care enough about you to see your growth. So whatever we call it, a blind spot or a point of, what did you call it? A point of growth potential.
I think blind spot is okay, but deficiency I really challenged, you know, because I think, I do think we could say something like, I just don't know it yet, but it doesn't have to be a less than lack than. And that's not, this is not just you. This is all of us, especially as women. Them. And so I'm offering that, I think, for all of us of like, in the ways that we speak to ourselves, does it have to be that something is wrong, or could it just be it's been an unknown until this moment, you know?
I love that. Okay, so Devi, y'all, Devi will point out my unknowns in remarkable, loving ways. How about that?
I love you. Okay.
I like that.
There's something, there's something else that you said that really struck me, Angela, and I never heard anybody speak to it yet. You talked about the personal grief of experiencing that Trump election cycle in that 4 years. That, like, I literally have chills right now because I have not heard anybody speak to that, and it needs to get spoken to, especially, you know, for people like you who have given so much, and in that space specifically of justice and the political realm, to be so studied, to have put down such tremendous foundation for so long. And then you have something like this that turns it on a head where it's like, how is this possible? This goes against everything that I've worked for and fought for and believed. So can you kind of deepen in that for a second? That's so profound to me.
I hope I can do this without crying or cussing. I'm a cussing Christian. I'd be telling these people, Lord, let me tell you, I remember when I got home, first of all, you talking about not having blind spots. I was completely unaware that this was possible.
Yeah.
Like when I tell you, Debbie, I was going on air, like cocky, like, of course Hillary Clinton's going, like cocky, like full on, like, I can't believe I'm even having to waste my time with you people. Like, you are completely ignorant. What are you talking? Like, completely in judgment, annoyed, condescension. I was so cocky about it. And part of my cockiness was a deep resentment for everything that man represented. He didn't start like the racism nonsense around the election. He started it as like the chief spokesperson for the birther movement against Barack Obama, right? So for me, I'm just like, this country's evolved. Like, I know we still have racism, and sure, it's not post-racial like they said about Barack Obama, but we've evolved enough. We wouldn't do this. Lo and behold, we did this, or they did this. So I got home the night of the election, face plant on my floor, and sobbed like somebody died because a part of me did. A part of me did. And it felt like a continuing betrayal of the ancestors and a continuing betrayal of for future generations, because I knew that the impact of his election was not going to end in 4 years, right? And the thing that I think is a positive about it is, one, I definitely needed to be knocked down a peg because of where, like, I was so arrogant about it. And then I really deepened into anger. That resentment turned into even deeper resentment on air. I would get so frustrated. I was paired with people who didn't have to have the same qualifications as me. And so the microaggressions that so many of our brothers and sisters talk about at work, right? You're watching it happen on air. And so people would say, like, you speak for me. And it's because I could say the thing on air that they couldn't say at work when somebody came at them sideways. But Devi, over time, that's toxic. So my dad, who many of my friends call Papa Rye would call after a segment, and he would know that it broke me. And I would just sob. Like, I can't believe I'm having to do this. I can't believe this is real. I was in deep denial about where we were. And so it meant a lot to me that people would say, you speak for me. But man, I wanted to say something that felt a whole lot better than what I had to argue about every time I was on air. And I think over time, I started to resent that. Like, this doesn't feel like a proactive strategy for us to deepen into our power. It feels like I'm on my heels, just swinging to fight back, just to keep us afloat. And it just was draining. Wow. And I got to the point where I was like, you know, this isn't healthy. You know, this isn't healthy. This isn't how we're going to move the culture forward. This isn't. And I'm not trying to take away from anybody who said, I'm your voice or I'm speaking for the culture. I'm grateful, but I also know the culture has so much more to say. We literally built this country on our backs. We have a whole lot more to say. And to be on the other side of this now, on the other side of the 2020 election, we got a lot more to say about this administration. This administration told us that they were going to be much better for us, right? That we wouldn't have to worry about these bigoted, xenophobic immigration policies, that justice and policing would become a real thing because 9 minutes plus is too long for a police officer to have their knee on somebody's neck. You know, that we would be able to vote freely, like John Lewis literally was beaten and bloodied for. People died for this right to vote. And here we are on the other side of this election, and none of those things are true. I just summarily reject that. And so my issue isn't with party. And no, this isn't a pitch to become Republican. I'm still very much a progressive. But my pitch is, isn't it time for us to end this racism, y'all? Like, isn't it time for us to completely get rid of the things that hold people back, especially the people who built this country? And so that's where I am now. I'm just like, what is righteous? What is moral? What is, from a human decency standpoint, what is decent? That's the only conversation I want to have. How do we move that forward? And so to me, Debbie, that is the bridge between a wellness journey, you know, and building character and deepening into your gifts and our politics and our culture and our history. Wow. You know, like we have people fighting about teaching real history in school. You guys got to lie for years in history books. It's time out for that. Like, we have come into a full reckoning, coming into the full knowledge of the truth. We can't do anything but stay right here and deepen into it. We're not going backwards, 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 backwards.
Dropping gem.
And you know what comes forward for me, Angela? It's like, and maybe it's just going to take time. You know, it's like a few shifts happen, a few paradigms change, you know, for us. And then sometimes it takes us a few decades, I guess, to catch up with. That's how I feel in terms of right now, the country being well and us understanding, you know, mental health is having its moment in the sun in this moment. That specific term is on everyone's mouth. Mental health. Oh, I'm an advocate for mental health. I believe in mental health. We have to study what the hell is happening and has happened in all of our collective psyche and in this country. And I feel like, you know, and it takes so freaking, it feels like it's taking so long when we think about the inception of the field of psychology or holistic studies. But it's like, the thing that really struck me during the whole last several years is like, how are we not calling out the fact that this person in office very clearly has mental disorders, very clearly. And then it turns into this, oh, we don't go around diagnosing. Okay, let's study it. Let's get the top psychologists, therapists, somatic therapists, cognitive therapists in the field to really look at the course of this person's life, at the decisions and choices made, at the things said, at the very clear manipulations and lies. And to this day, it strikes me that we haven't been calling that out. It's a clear display of someone who is disordered. Now, in my understanding and my personal studies, obviously I can't make a diagnosis, but this is a whole sociopath. Sure. This is a whole high level on the spectrum narcissist, you know, and we need to be studying how one becomes that, right? Like, if we look back at some of the things that have to do with Trump's background in his childhood, it's like, okay, he had a father that clearly looked very disordered and mentally and emotionally and abusive. So at what point did that change him? At what point did that turn him into someone that is apathetic and has the inability to care and the inability to see truth in any way? And then how has that affected his main following? Because it's very clear that there is something on a psychological level that is happening or not happening with the people that cut for him. And I just don't understand. Yeah. Like, I'm tired of staying on the surface of everybody misusing language. Oh, yeah, mental health. Oh, wellness. Okay, to be well, we have to change. To be well, we have to step forward and speak truth and dive into and excavate and get in the damn crevices, you know, and disrupt it and heal it. And so I feel like mental health is getting weaponized. I feel like wellness gets weaponized. I feel like so many people take over language and it becomes used as a tool for spiritual bypass and emotional bypass. And that's, you know, that's what I really took away from one of the biggest things we needed to notice about this last several crazy years in politics.
See, and the thing too, to me, is I started getting upset with people just scapegoating Donald Trump, right? Like talking about his mental health and him being a sociopath. Which I agree with, like, again, clearly, right? Like, you didn't need any more signs, and not to joke about it. But like Harry Reid, the former Senate Majority Leader, said, and it's so right, he said, Donald Trump is the Republican Party's Frankenstein, right? And the reason why he could say that is because, Debbie, there were a bunch of enablers.
Oh, God, yes.
All the primary voters were enablers, right? With the whole point you were just making around, oh, but he's resonating with some folks. Now, why is that? And still, even if it's not a sociopath behavior on the Democratic side of the aisle, what in you says it starts to develop a hierarchy for humanity where you say, it's okay for me to take advantage of this group of people. It's okay for me to marginalize this group of people. It's okay for me to leave you forgotten and voiceless over here. But these folks over here, we got to look out for. Whatever that is in our psyche, in our collective psyche, in our collective consciousness, that has to change too.
Oh, 100.
So it's not just the right? It's not just the individual diagnoses. It's also on a macro level what needs to shift. These systems of oppression that have been here for so long that people are now so comfortable with, they will start an insurrection on January 6th at the nation's capital. What has to shift for that? What about the way you define power has to change so you know that abuse of power is not acceptable and never was?
And that's what I mean. Like, we need to be studying the whole look at the gaslighting of America, especially because we are, in comparison, such a new country. You know, we're the leading in the world, but 1776 is when we started populating over here in the way that we did. And we brought, you know, we quote unquote created a government system rooted in equality. And from the very words of our Constitution mirrored against what was actually happening, that is the definition of gaslighting. We were denying reality as a country. We were saying something, writing something, asking people to memorize and declare something that was not actually true or happening. And it's like that fundamental, that fundamental mistruth is what everything this society that we've created here is built upon. Our consumerism is built upon. Our advertising is built upon. And so it's like, at what point do we really look at the mechanics of that to create systems of change? You know, and there's so many layers of things that have to be excavated, cleaned, cleared, looked at and created. But I think at a fundamental level, it really starts with the way in which we have really messed up the human psyche in America. And we can't, I, you know, in my kind of generalized way of saying or talking about it in this moment, it's just, we can't be well. We can't make the significant sweeping changes that have to be made to honor our individual humanity until we really look at the mechanics of our foundation and how that informed the ways that we look at ourselves, feel about ourselves, treat ourselves, especially in this country.
Yeah, that's the thing, Debbie. It's like when you talk about the foundational work, and I think going back to what you were, you know, saying to me on my own journey, I think that's really what's behind it for me. Like, I'm not going to go around just pointing out all of the shortcomings of this country or the people who continue to implement those abuses. What do I need to change too? Because I don't want to be even an accidental perpetrator of that, right? Like, I don't want to participate in that. Like, how can I be in the highest level of integrity across the board in my own systems that I create, in my business, in my relationships with myself? And I'm not saying, oh, I need to do this personal work and then America can figure out. No, we can operate on two tracks. But I also want to make sure that I'm seeing it as clearly as possible, that I can, you know, approach this with compassion, with empathy for the people who are on the other side of the abuses, especially for the other folks. I just want to tell them the truth. I'll try to do that more tenderly in love, but it's really hard 400 plus years later. Like, it's tough. It's tough. And you hear those conversations so often where people are like, well, I didn't own slaves. And it's like, no, but you're the benefactor of folks who did. You're the beneficiary of folks who did. And so can you at least own that responsibility, you know? And that's what I'm saying. Like, even in the smallest, the micro, you know, level examples of that, like for myself, when I've done something wrong, and even if I didn't think it was that bad, can I own my own wrong? It's the same thing. You know, like, we have to model the behavior that we want to see. And I think that gets us closer to where we want to be. Thank God for the folks that are the allies out here, or the accomplices. They say allies, not a strong enough word these days, for the accomplices who will do that work and will challenge their friends and family members to do that same work. It's imperative. It can't shift without them. Literally.
Yeah. What a time to be alive. What a time to be alive, I think, in so many ways. Like, I find it to be exhausting, but exciting. You know, it's like, think of all the generations that of people, and it was probably fewer amounts that were noticing things like this, but there was no way to speak it. There was no way to actually make personalized choices that created different ways of being. And it's like, even on some of the harder days, being here on Earth in this crazy experiment that's happening, that gets me through. That really allows me to feel excited about the work. What are you excited about right now?
I love that. Ooh, I'm excited about growth. I'm also tired. I feel like life is coming at me fast on every side, but I'm like, okay, clearly we're supposed to be in this. Right now, I've been describing this season as being in the, like, a hot desert with the sun beating down on you. And you're like, where can I just go hide in some shade real quick? And there's no place to go. So I'm excited about the journey and what's on the other side of it, because I know that I'm going through it without very very many grace pockets for a reason. Like, I need to learn in this, you know, in this haze up environment for whatever reason. I am also, I'm so excited for my godson who graduates this year, or this in 2022, and will be going to college. I'm excited for his potential, for all these young people who are doing dope and incredible things. What else? I'm excited about this book, the journey for the book. I'm excited about that.
I'm so excited for this book too. I'm so excited for all the things. I know you are.
Yeah.
Just knowing some of the ways in which your mind works and your heart works, I just know that this book, it's just going to bless people. It's going to free people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sis. Yeah. I'm excited about that. And I just feel like, this season for me is really about, it's a cracking opening. You know, there have been a lot of places where, you know, things broke off, broke up, broke down. But I know now, like, those pieces, they shattered off me because there's something new. It's like snakeskin. It's like really knowing, like, there's an unfolding happening, and it's so dope. And so when I'm not afraid of, like, okay, I don't know what's happening, I don't know where we're going, I'm like, but I can take comfort in knowing I'm so much better than when I began this journey. And that's exciting too. Like, for once, like, okay, I have the faith to know it's going to be so much better. And that is exciting because I know I can't see it. A blind spot.
Not a deficiency. Not a blind spot.
I was teasing because your eyes are closed. So I was like, y'all, we troll each other. It's all love.
Listen, Angela trolls me. so hard. It is like the funniest. I don't think I've ever had a friendship quite like this. Yeah, you troll me so hard. It's so funny. And you do it, you try to like sprinkle it in like the sweetest little voice, like right before we hop off the phone, you're like, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, girl. Okay, sis. All right. I'm like, what? Hold on.
First of all, I know that I can't be a bigger troll than our dear brother, Leonard. I know that crazy. I can't be.
That's exactly. Crazy.
So she does have another troll in her life. Guy. There's two of us.
I know. Lord help me.
She didn't see him right now because it's.
And then Angela be trying to make me think that I'm trolling. It's like, I feel like I'm being gaslit by you too.
No, you don't think that. That was a troll moment just now, ladies and gentlemen, in case you missed. Call me a gaslighter.
Like, no, what? never. But yeah,
but no, I'm loving these 90s vibes. That's the other thing I'm excited about, these 90s vibes. I hope Debbie breaks out all the 90s vibes. This is a whole,
yeah. I don't know if everyone's seeing me. I don't know if we're doing this on video. We might have a clip, but I got my little sticks in. I got my little thing.
It's a vibe. They have to put a video clip up. It's a vibe.
Somebody come get Angela. How?
So in case you all missed, I just said I don't live in boxes. So I like fashion. I like candles. I like this store that Debbie hit me to called Shaman's Market. Oh. I like to eat. We both like to eat. We like to laugh. We like to dance. I love Debbie's playlist. We've talked about this before. So I'm just multifaceted.
You really are. You're such an interesting person. You have so many. Beautiful facets of you, you know? And I think especially like your house is such a great representation of that. It's such like the perfect, you just get it. The second you walk into your house, you're like, I'm in Angela's psyche right now. I am inside of Angela right now. I get it. Okay.
Well,
before we get out of here, I'd like to ask, Angela, if you have any soul work that you could share with the collective right now. And so, you know, maybe that's something that you are personally savoring, a point or a piece of self-inquiry that could be journaled to later, just thought about later. And I'd also love to know three things that you really enjoy that help you recharge yourself. Or help you connect to you when you're in your process.
That's good. Okay, I'm gonna do the three things first because I feel like that's easier. So Debbie, y'all, has hipped me to this idea of a salt bath with all of the salt. Like, y'all, like all of the salt, like bags on bags on bags. Now, what Debbie doesn't know is that I refuse to do 3 bags of Epsom salt and I'm just doing one.
But that's all. Home with like bag. 3 bags before.
And I did it that time. But okay. Now, see, now I'll lose the trail, y'all. But anyway, I followed the instructions the first time, but now I just do one whole bag. And I told Naja to do this. And she was like, you do a whole bag? This is like $15. And I was like, no, it's not. And I was like, I said, I'm going to tell you like Debbie told me, are you worth it? And she was like, I'm going to put the whole bag in.
And listen.
So I definitely am loving these baths.
I was going to say, it's cheaper on Amazon. I ordered the Amazon brand Epsom salts.
Girl, if they're not sponsoring this podcast,
I know, but money. I want everyone to have it. If you go into the store and you get the Dr. Teals, which
Amazon,
is
y'all better sponsor
which is
it.
Great, it's but it is like $15, and I go on Amazon and I get a bag with the same amount, and it's like $5. So you know, I like
Amazon. You better sponsor this podcast, not just these trips to Mars. She didn't give you 3 shout outs, and I tried to stop.
I'm sorry. I want everyone to know how to get the things and how to get them on the low, so that it doesn't have to be a once a week thing or a once a month thing. Like, could you do this 3 nights a week if you needed it?
She could say this on every podcast if Amazon sponsored. That's all I'm saying. She would say this.
I would also like to go to space at some point, so I'll throw that out there too. Okay, so a bath is
okay. I was on number one. I got two more, Debbie. Two more. So the other things that I love. You may not remember this, but you told me. You might remember this. It wasn't that long ago, but you told me to do a playlist for my sixth grade self. So that I could, and eat some of the sixth grade food so that I can remember some of the positive things and not just the negative trauma aspects of sixth grade. I love that playlist because it's 91, 92 and it is epic. And I also have started for my book, which is On Freedom, like a playlist for that. And it's just like now, and again, y'all don't understand, like y'all need to have Debbie do a playlist thing because she's very good at this. But the playlists are a game changer. And it also has taught me that our holiness and those most sacred moments can also have some ratchet in it. And in case you missed it, I am Sophista Holy Ratchet. It was such a Sophista Ratchet. I'm Sophista Holy Ratchet.
Sophista Holy Ratchet.
What about Sophista Divine Ratchet? Oh, I love
that. That is so you. That is so you.
No, that's our whole friendship. That's our whole friendship. God. What do you mean?
No.
It's our whole friendship. Okay, what's my third one? My third one is...
So while you're thinking of three, I want to let everyone know that the piece about the playlist, especially as it relates to our inner child, I have an inner child episode that I dive more into that. So if that piques your interest, look up the inner child episode.
I'm watching that today or listening to that today. I'm listening to that today. So my third one. So I was writing in Mara Brock Akil's space. She had me as an artist in residence for the last 2 months to write the book. And Mara was like, when you write, write in flowy clothes. So I got all this stuff from, I'm not going to say where because they need to sponsor the podcast. But I got all this stuff from a place that should not be named, that is not the one that Debbie kept saying, it's someplace else. And I got all these like flowy, I'm a jumpsuit purse, like fanatic. So jumpsuits, all these flowy pieces. And it really does help. I do think that there are places where you write and you need to be supported, because I also love some stretch pants. And in those moments where you need to be supported and held, that's probably when you put on, you know, like stuff that will hold you a little more tightly. But the flowy thing, the stuff comes. So Mara, I love you for that. Shout out to you for that one. Now, the other question was, what am I learning that I need to journal about?
Yeah.
Right?
Or no, what is maybe a thought that came to you that could be useful for anyone listening to think about later?
So I've really been kind of chewing on this quite a bit. I did an IG live on it, but it is how we live in the gray matter. We really, truly exist in the gray matter, but so often, sometimes on ourselves, but especially with other people, we love to put people in a black and white box. Like, oh, well, you did this and this because of that. But when it comes to ourselves, it's like, well, that happened because such and such. We give ourselves the grace of the reason. But with other people, there's no grace for the reason. It's just like, this is black and white. I can't believe you did that. You're a terrible human being, whatever it is. And really, the truth of the matter is we're human and not God, because we have shortcomings, because we have thorns in the flesh, because we have temptation, because we have trauma, because of all of the things we experience that make us the humans who we are. That is what causes us to live in the gray matter. Those are the things that keep us humble. But they are there to keep us humble so we'll be gracious to our neighbors. And so that's one of the things I'm really noodling on and want to dig deeper into, because I think there's a real blessing there. I'm someone who deals, you know, I can be judgmental because I had the gift of discernment. I can be hypercritical because of that same gift. What happens if I deepen into the grace around that? How much more discerning, intuitive, you know, and gracious would I be if I stayed right there with like, well, we live in the gray. It may not be that cut and dry. And as much as I would prefer that control, it's not mine to have. So that's what I've been thinking about.
A master lesson on grace. We could all use a little more of it, right? For ourselves and in the way that we connect to others. It's funny because that even brings me back to how we started the show, with the way that people were reacting to things that were said, you know, and it's like, I think that was my overwhelming, you know, I don't really look at comments and I don't really open my DMs because it's just a lot of energy. Even the really good stuff, it's kind of like, okay, this mm-hmm. is a lot. You know, I still got to be in my life. But yeah, it's even, yeah. you know, even for, I think about that sometimes as it relates to even the people that say unkind things to people online, you know, it's like, but if that's the only place that you feel you can be heard or expressed, or if that's your only way to release the inner chaos that you feel inside every day, and you think that that's actually giving you a release, like, I get it. I understand it, you know, and it's like, it's not okay. And it's not quote unquote good, whatever, you know, those polarities are, but I do understand, you know, which is why I think sovereignty is so important, like being self-sovereign, which is what was displayed in that clip, as opposed to, you know, an idea of selfishness. It's like, we all have the right to act and be however we wish. But can we do it with a little more grace? Can we do it with more grace for ourselves and our needs? Can I still be in grace even if I see you trying to maybe get me out of it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, Debbie, to the point, even going back to boundaries, you're someone who I hope to emulate when communicating my boundaries. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that I struggled with setting boundaries, like, you know, again, like that martyrdom that really is pervasive, I think, especially in
oh my Black God, community, yes.
and really all communities of color, right? But like, how can I take up this space for myself, you know, and without apology, and still don't have to be rude, just clear. Like, yeah, no, I can't do that today. Just clear, no energy behind it. Just like, no, I can't do that today. Like, every time you tell me no or you can't about something, I'm like, she got to do that. I'm cool. Like, I'm cool. There's other friends. I'll be like, what do you mean? But I've never felt like that. It's like, so like, it's not a punitive boundary. It's a loving boundary. Oh,
that's such a beautiful way to say it. Yeah. It's not about punishing and it's not about withholding. And I think that's what we're trained to mm-hmm. believe when someone says no, that it's a power pull or it's a withholding or it's an againstness. Yeah. And it's like, but if we don't know the inner workings of everyone's life, like, we can't assume that, you know, we don't understand the pulls that people have. And sometimes it's just, hey, it's just no, because we deserve that too without reason. It can just be no for a no. But it takes so much practice. And I think that's why it really was beautiful for me to see the mixed responses, because that helps me know where people are at, and that further informs my work. And my work is to help people be free. My work is to help people accept themselves and love themselves at the deepest level. But yeah, boundaries take such a tremendous amount of practice. And I remember when I first realized that I severely lacked having any boundaries in my life, the first few months of being in practice with it, it was really scary. It was excruciating saying no. I mean, to say no to one thing that now I would be, girl, no. And I would walk away and never think of it again. I would think about it for days, how to say no in just the way, or how, you know, and it's like, I can cast all of that aside. You know, if my no brings up something in someone else, then I definitely should have said no. Then I know I'm right on track, you know? Like, if my no to somebody is causing you to want to disrespect me, be angry at me, be in judgment of me, you needed my no too, because you have to explore how you feel about your boundaries and other people's boundaries, you know? But it's a, you know, I loved, because even to that clip, people are like, oh my God, I want to say no like that. I want to be able to do that. You have to practice it every day. It took me my whole life to learn how to say no. And that's why I say it with such depth and such joy now. I don't say, I'm not like, no. I'm like, oh no, no, thank you. Like,
have you ever been like, hell no,
girl, no. F no. But you know what, and that's what I think is so, and we talked about this on the episode that I hope everyone listens to, but I think that is what's so great about being in friendship with other people who love themselves, or even, and I know that takes time. And so if anyone is listening, does not feel deep in their own self-love, that's okay. You're getting there. You will be there, and you are worthy of love right now in this moment. But it's so beautiful to be in practice with our friendships, to be in a space where one wrong answer or one trigger or one poke of a wound doesn't mean that we're now cast aside. And, you know, I don't believe that, I don't consider people to be disposable. No one, even people that I dislike, even people that I have cut out of my life, I still think that they're worthy of love, that they are beloved children of God, but I can make a conscious choice to not be in active participation with them. But I don't think people are disposable enough, especially friendships. Like, I don't think that there is anything that we can't be on the other side of, or at least at personal peace with, even if there's distance, with a conversation, you know? And so I love, like, in our friendship and our friendship with Leonard, and our in many of our friendships that we have separately with people, it's like, we can be in practice. We can get it a little wrong sometimes. It's okay. We can get it really right. You know, I can say something and you can be like, listen, I respect it. Please don't talk to me like that. That's not how you have to get that across to me, you know? Or, hey, I didn't feel what, can you give me more clarity on what you meant when you said that? Or I heard a tone in that. Can you just let me know what you were feeling inside, you know? And we don't have to be in agreement about any of it. I could still be mad. You could still be mad, but can we communicate from a deeper aspect of ourselves, from a higher aspect of ourselves?
I love it. Over here dropping gems.
Thank you for coming on the show. I know you're about to disappear from the world because you're going into full writing mode and you're going to be on sabbatical.
A little one. I'm nervous. I've never been.
What's that going to look like for you?
I have a rigorous schedule that I wrote out so that I'm clear about the fact that I'm on assignment. And so the sabbatical is not rest. No. It is just like being on one track so I can be an available, accessible vessel. That is my mission right now. Oh, yeah. So we got to move off the distractions. Mm-hmm.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
Angela Rye, I love you. Thank you.
I love you, girl. I'm so glad you can see 2020. See, better than Superman, child. You got vision on this thing.
I love you. Everybody, please. Take Angela's deep, deeply wise and beautiful tips with you. Think about them today. If you have any time later today, maybe pull out a line that really meant something to you and close your eyes and meditate on it. Write a couple bullet points to it. But anything that resonates that you hear in this show, even anything that brings up charge in you, take time to spend with it. Spend time with it. See where it leads you. Thank you for listening.
Big love.
Namaste. Hey, find me on social. Let's connect. At Devi Brown, that's Twitter and Instagram, or go to my website, devibrown.com. And if you're listening to this show on Apple Podcasts, please, please, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And send this episode to a friend. Dropping Gems is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. It's produced by Jack Weiss and me, Debbie Brown. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.